you're all ready for the fastest hour in hockey. It's the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, AA, Andrew Adams, Jake the Snake Schultz with you for the next hour. We are live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, and watching on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Plus. If you can't catch us live, download us at your convenience. And remember, this hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, is brought to you by Bet365. For all of those complaining on how long games will take in the Stanley Cup Final, we're going to snap our fingers. We're going to have two games done in three nights.
Beautiful. Love that. Also love your hat, by the way.
It's Real Kipper and Bourne hat. I have not worn a hat since we've been on air. But I'm going.
But you know what? You've broken the ice here, and now I feel freed up to do it.
So I gave you one.
I've been doing it all year. So
Sammy's he's going with the Argo look.
Yeah,
that's good. Like, if I'm gonna produce, if I'm gonna like promote, I'm gonna promote our show.
Yeah,
I love that.
Shout out to my guy Fraser Sopic.
All right,
linebacker on the Argos.
In a couple of minutes, we're gonna welcome in Craig Simpson, former NHLer, two-time Stanley Cup champion, and of course, a great voice of ours on Hockey Night in Canada. Nice of him to make time for us before the big game.
Yes.
So he'll join us in a few minutes. Thanks for Craig for filling in, because Sammy couldn't get the Edmonton Oilers flasher on our show because Spit and Chicklets beat us to it. Sammy.
Listen, that's not a call I was going to make, boys.
I'm a happily married man, okay? I would never be calling
her. Is she turning into a big star right now? Is that what happened?
I'm not sure it can't be. I've seen certain videos like the rest of the world, and that's all I got for you.
Did you watch the interview with her on Spit and Chicklets?
No, I didn't. I saw it. I saw clips, but I didn't watch it.
Saw a clip?
Yeah, I saw the clips.
Was it good? Was she any good?
Thrilling. Almost as thrilling as the head coach of the Oilers.
Or did her interview go over like two lead balloons?
I'm just avoiding this conversation as best I can.
All right. So we'll go with Craig Simpson.
All right. Let's do that.
Obviously Saturday night, everything you kind of anticipated, was it as much as just Bobrovsky stealing game one, or did you see more? Because I thought there was it was a little deeper than just thinking that one guy, as good as Bobrovsky was, stole this game.
Yeah, when you think deeper, do you mean that the way that Edmonton kind of took it to Florida for a lot of the game gave you some hope for the Oilers?
Yeah, I think it's there for sure.
Yeah.
But I saw glaring mistakes that sometimes you don't overcome. Mm-hmm. And particularly on the two goals for me, and let's welcome in Craig Simpson. He was there. He watched it live. You saw it, Craig. I'm just thinking, as good at times the Oilers looked with the push, two glaring mistakes on two 200-foot breakout that led to goals for the Florida Panthers was as much as the difference for me than just Bobrovsky. Let's bring in Craig Simpson now.
It's another example, Nick, of just, you know, how magnified everything is at this time of the season. There's only two teams left playing. There's only a game every other night, and one little mistake might be, you know, the razor thin difference between victory or defeat. And I thought, you know, it's kind of what happens in these big moments. You play an almost perfect game. You go in and don't look out of place. I don't think that Edmonton, I think both teams were a little bit nervous early, and that's not uncommon, especially when you have, you know, the magnitude of the Stanley Cup, but also East versus West when you're not, it's a whole new series. Each new series takes on a different life of its own, but it's the little execution errors that could be costly, and there's no question that that was the difference. You know, you give up the first shot goal again for the fourth time in the playoffs. And I think to their credit, Edmonton didn't let that even bother them. You know, that's something that might rattle you early. It could have rattled Stuart Skinner. Instead, I know he wasn't the busier of the two goaltenders, but he's solidified his game and got back. And I thought to their credit, the Oilers did well as well. But, you know, two little mistakes are the reason why you're down 1-0 in a series. So you have to learn from that, grow from that, and get back. And you know, Nick, you've each game you've got to come back with a better effort, and you learn a little bit and you grow a little bit and you start to try to get some traction in a series.
So as analysts, and I think same with coaches, we talk about those little errors the Oilers made that led to a couple Panthers goals, but you're sitting there today, the Edmonton Oilers are a wonderful offensive team, and they get no goals against Florida, obviously, but Bobrovsky was fantastic. Do you think that it's going to be hard for them to do what they usually do because of the way Florida plays, or if Bob is average, are they going to find a way to score their usual 3-4 goals a night?
Yeah, I think at this stage, you're not expecting any easy offense. And like we just said, the sort of gifted offense that Florida received, they capitalize and they win the game. So I think you go in knowing that you're not going to have, you know, lots of free flow, easy chances. And I thought that, you know, Edmonton didn't start cheating the game or start taking overly risky plays to try to generate the offense. And they got their fair share of looks. They had a couple of open nets that, you know, maybe 80% of the time, Hyman doesn't lift it up and over from in tight. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, maybe 7 out of 10 times, will put that in the back of the net instead of over it. So I just think you can't, it's like any journey that they've already, both these teams have been through. You can't get too high, getting up 1-0. You know you're going to have to come back with a better effort and just settle into the series. And I would just take out of it from game one that you start to understand what the Florida matchup that you're going to be up against, how guys play together. You know, if you're McDavid, you knew Barkov, okay, he's a good centerman. But now after at least one game, you look and say, okay, I see how he's trying to mirror me in the neutral zone. So what do I have to adjust and what do I have to maybe do different to try to counteract that? And I think that's the love about a new series and a bunch of new one-on-one or line-against-line or D-pair-against-line matchups that guys start to understand and get a feel about how their opponent plays. And that's what great players and good teams do is, you know, you make adjustments to how you have to counteract that.
We're talking to Craig Simpson, who's getting ready for game two of the Stanley Cup final that could be seen on Hockey Night in Canada. So, Craig, I want to follow up a little bit with the Barkov versus McDavid. And I know that everybody talked about McDavid looked good and, you know, maybe a little snake bitten, but, you know, here's what I saw last night or Saturday night in game one. I saw Barkov outplay Connor McDavid. And, you know, from a production point of view, 2 assists plus 2. And, yep. You know, the feeling was that the Selke guy had to shut down Connor McDavid. And we still feel that way. But there's a sense, too, especially on the first goal, where Connor gets caught and leaves Barkov on a 200-foot 3-on-2, and it's like, hey, wait a second. Some nights McDavid's going to have to shut down Barkov, too. What did you see Saturday night out of the matchup?
Well, that's what I mean about finally playing an actual game. You know, McDavid has huge respect for Barkov, but it's not a matchup that you've had that often, and you can throw in the garbage the early games that they played against them. So now you get in the Stanley Cup final, and I thought Gret said it well in our first intermission. You know, the sort of shock for him to go up against Brian Trotsche and go, oh, like this guy is really good. And it's not like you disrespected him going in, but you don't know until you have to go 1, 2, 3, 4 games in a row with the same guy in the same matchup. And I said it was really interesting that first goal, and we showed it on the replay. You know, Connor's thinking offense, and you have to be at that point because you're the top line. You're an offensive generator line. And the D-man made a good play on Hyman, which then sprung Barkov. And it was amazing. Like, it was an instantaneous, uh-oh. You could see that McDavid knew, oh, we're caught. And I think what he probably didn't expect is the speed of Barkov to be able to maintain the distance. And, you know, Nick, that's what you get in a series. Now you understand better what your opponent is all about. Now you understand how he likes to play, or maybe you didn't think he was as fast as he is, and now you know you're going to have to adjust quicker or do things differently or be on maybe a safer side on that same play in game two. And that's the beauty of getting into a series and understanding who you got to play against and how they react, and maybe you get a better understanding for their strength or their speed and their skill. And That's what I love about, you know, you get this far, you've gone through it three times already. You've had to adjust your game from the Los Angeles series to all of a sudden a pretty nasty and harder hitting Vancouver series to a Dallas series that didn't have much of that. And you had to play a certain way and had to adjust differently. Now you're in the Cup final. And for the fourth time, you know, game two is one that you get settled in and say, oh, I think I have to react a little bit differently. And I think I have to be conscious of this.
Zimmer, you know, if you rolled out two identical rosters, two different teams, and you didn't change anyone, and they played each other 100 times, you would get very different results. You wouldn't get the same outcome every time. And I mention that because the Oilers are going to make some roster changes. It sounds like CeCe may come out for Desharnais. Carrick's a game-time decision maybe for Perry. You know, how quickly do you adjust? Do you not just want to roll out a team that handled a lot of the game very well in game one and see if it goes better a second time before making these changes?
Yeah, I think, though, you look at just the last little stretch, and to his credit, Knobloch hasn't been afraid to make some moves, and he's found that his team has reacted well to those moves, and it's been successful. So you also know that you don't have much time here. You know, it's not a must-win tonight, but you know coming in, you go in with the idea that you've got to split. You know, if you don't split, now you're coming back with huge pressure down 2-0. So I just think that they're comfortable with some interchangeable parts. I think he's liked having Carrick or Ryan in and out of the lineup. Perry served his, suit coming back in the lineup, but I wouldn't at all be adverse to sitting him for a little bit as well, because I thought in a game like that got going and you're down by two, you know, he's effective if you can get offensive zone possession time and do some cycles and get around the front of the net. But if that's not happening and the game's moving quickly, you know, maybe you are better suited for a game to change the look and have somebody who has a little bit more speed and can separate and make some of those plays. So hard to question a coach who's done the things that he's done this year, from turning a team, you know, 3-9-1 around and getting them to the Stanley Cup final. And the adjustments have given the team a different look and new life. And so I'm not totally shocked that he is. And I'm sure that everybody who gets their chance now to come in and make a difference, you know, relishes it and wants to be an impact. And, you know, the Oilers, I think, will have even a better game, as will Florida. I think Florida will be a better team in game two as well.
Zimmer, you mentioned earlier about Skinner allowing a goal on his first shot. It's happened 11 times this season, 7 in the regular season, 4 in the playoffs. What does that do to Edmonton's psyche, especially when you look across 200 feet away and you see that out of Bobrovsky?
Yeah, it's a tough one, Nick. And you know how much strength as a team you draw from your goaltender, and you go, oh, yeah, he's dialed in tonight. You know, we don't have to worry. We can be more aggressive, and we can maybe make a mistake, and he's going to bail us out. So I would say, though, just as much as you hate those numbers, they, you know, 11 is a lot, and 4 in 18 games is a significant amount too. But I think that they all feel, you know, you have trust now in the guy that it's not going to crush him, and he has responded from it, and you've won some games where that has happened. So I think that settles you in. But I don't think there's any question. If that happens again tonight, it's like, oh, no, here we go again. And you got to feel, you know, that's why I even said with the goaltender out last game, they weren't going to win the game, but they had about 30 seconds left. And I thought, you know, you got to try to do your best to score here. You got to eliminate the Bobrovsky effect, because you get shut out on a night in the regular season where you put 30 or 40 at a goaltender. You go to the next game, you got a different goalie, you got a different team, you got a whole different set of circumstances. You know, that's what playoffs are wild about. You're playing against the same group, and you got that same guy again. So you can't allow him to become the story of the series. And I thought if they had been able to break the dam at the end of game one, it would have served them well to just go, okay, you know, we've got him now. We got to find a way. So, you know, the longer that it goes, you get into the second period of game two and you still got a zero on the board, you start thinking a little differently. You go, well, what do I have to do to beat this guy? And so I really think it's going to be important early on to try to get that the all-important first goal of the game to just sort of say, settle in and say, yeah, we're okay. And otherwise, from a Florida perspective, if it's a non-event game and it's scoreless going into the second, I think that bodes well for the type of game that they can play.
Simmer, before the series, a lot of the story was the Panthers are the most physical, penalty-ridden team in the NHL. The Oilers have this great power play. Did you think physicality, do you think it played out in the first game like you expected to? And do you still think that there's a role to play in this series for that part of the game? Have we not yet seen how it's going to shape things?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen it yet, Justin. I don't think it was a super big factor in game one. And, you know, I think that's one thing that Paul Maurice has tried to emphasize, that, you know, they're a much more disciplined team. Yeah, they're a hard-hitting team, but trying to stay out of trouble. The fact that they only gave up three power plays is probably one more than he would have liked to, but they weren't undisciplined. They didn't get unraveled. And you look at last year in the Stanley Cup final, I was laughing at Maurice because he was saying how much more disciplined. Last year going into the final, Florida averaged 12.7 penalty minutes per game. You know what they were coming into last night?
I actually think it's 20. Oh, is it the same?
12.2. So I said, you're not that much of a different team. The problem in games one and two last year for Florida, in the two games, they had 135 penalty minutes and had seven 10-minute misconducts, three of them to Matthew Tkachuk. So it kind of unraveled really quickly for them on the road in Vegas. And I think that's where you saw that you didn't see a whole lot of scrums in game one. I think they would have learned a lesson. Like, don't get chasing it, how excited you are to get into the final. Now all of a sudden you're in penalty trouble, your big guys are frustrated, and you're down 2-0. And so I think there was, you know, maybe more of a script laid out for them to be physical, do what we have to do to impose our, you know, physicality in this series, but make sure you don't get into what trap they got into last year against Vegas.
Simmer, when you think about the start that the Edmonton Oilers had this year, and, you know, some of us maybe made the mistake of writing them off a little early, maybe one or two of us here on the panel back in November, but you obviously went through the rest of the regular season, which was fantastic for them, and then you drew off of that again in various times in the playoffs. But this is the Stanley Cup final. How important is it for you that they come out of this a split, and what would they be facing in terms of an uphill battle if they go back to Edmonton down 2-0?
Yeah, I think you have to be of the mindset, and every player goes, okay, you know, it's not a shock that we lost game one on the road. That shouldn't put anybody in terror or go, oh, man, we're playing badly. You know, we had chances to win that game. We didn't. We had a good goalie performance against us. We lived that against Dallas, but Skinner stealing one. So I think from a calmness, because of all the experiences they had during the regular season coming back, and also during this playoffs, that they've been, you know, 1-1 in all three series to this point. So I think they're comfortable in that mindset. I think, Nick, it's, you know, obviously you want to come out and get the split. But if you play another game where you're the better team and fundamentally you've played a good game, you've put all kinds of pressure, maybe you get a bad luck break or you get another performance from Bobrovsky, I think that's equally as important as getting the win. You know, I don't think this team would be you know, shocked or dead in the water if they happen to lose this game. I do think that they believe that they're a team that, you know, rarely loses three in a row. It doesn't happen to them often. They have the ability to go on a run. But you got to come into this game with the mindset of, you know, a split to go home and we're all good. But if you play a solid game and you do what you have to execute your game plan and you still come out with a loss, I think you can survive it. And it's going to be a different animal going back home to Edmonton. And, you know, if they can continue to grow and get some building blocks and get some stability, I think they'll be okay. But you've got to come into this game as you know, both of you know, you never want to go down two in a series. Just the numbers don't support success. So the difference between being 1-1 is significant. And I think you just have to be of an even keel and a solid mindset to go out and execute your game. And obviously, if you get it, great. If you don't, then it's back to work again the next game.
Yeah, they played well enough that they should feel good about that. Hey, yeah. Random kind of aside here. What did you think of them having the Stanley Cup on the ice before the game one of the Cup final? Hasn't been there in six decades.
It felt really strange, didn't it? Yeah. I didn't... I did know it was happening, but they just told us earlier on. And I just think everybody was kind of like, I don't know if I want to see this thing now.
So you don't want to think about it.
I know how players are, and that adds to it a little bit. So I guess the excitement-wise from the league's perspective is to showcase why we're here. But, yeah, definitely every player has a bit of, nervousness of they know what they're playing for. And to see it on the ice is like, oh, man, I hope it's on the ice at our side when this thing ends. Because I think everybody felt a little bit uneasy about it being there with them for the starting lineup.
And overall, the vibe down in Florida, Simmer, I mean, for the Panthers, we know at times it's been a challenging organization. Sometimes the building's been half full over the years. What's the sense you got down there in the last couple of days?
It was good, Nick. And I thought they did a lot of engagement around the rink, and everybody was excited. And I think it's different than last year, right? I really do think it is. Now the fans know what this means. They know the disappointment of losing last year, and I think they're not taken for granted. I do say, again, nothing like in Edmonton, though. The city's on pins and needles, and they're abuzz. There was a huge contingent of Oilers fans on Saturday here in Florida, so I wasn't surprised with that. Oilers fans are well-traveled and support all over. So I'll be interested to see on a Monday night if that changes at all here. But I think overall the Florida organization has put on a great show. And I think the fans are truly, they're into it. They're knowledgeable about their team. And now with a second chance in 24 months, I think they're pretty jacked up and excited to be getting the opportunity again.
Well, we're jacked up to hear you and CeCe tonight on the call in game two. Simmer, we so appreciate you making time on a game day. Get some rest. Have a great call. Looking forward to it, pal. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Simmer.
That is Craig Simpson, the voice.
The man.
Boy, we haven't had a Degonk in a while.
No.
Listen,
it's been a good year.
We're not there yet, boys. Let's cross the finish line before we start talking about that.
So, like you, I'm watching the Stanley Cup at the beginning.
I like it, personally.
Oh, well,
you do.
I will say this. Again, okay, there's two schools of thought. Like, the first one, you could say, from a player's perspective, and yeah, I want to see it when it's presented to me. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. It is a huge star.
It's star.
It's a marketing star. I don't think you can show it enough. And it is a friendly reminder. Hey, boys, here's what you're playing for.
In like reality TV, they wheel out the $1 million of cash for all the contestants to have a look
okay
at before they compete. You
I'm
know,
okay with it. I thought I would
you guys
hate
are right.
it.
You guys are right.
I thought I would hate it. But at the end of the day, it is the biggest star.
And if it makes people nervous, all the better. Right? That just like,
and
you know, it's
not,
important.
Like, there's like all the trophies and across sports are beautiful. But there's no shock factor trophy like the Stanley Cup. When you
so
see
true.
That, you're like, oh my God,
and when
that
you
is
haven't
the most
won
beautiful
it,
thing.
It's like kryptonite to Superman.
Yeah.
It's like, your knees start buckling, right?
Yeah.
Start sweating a little bit.
It's
Should
so funny how lame the Lombardi trophy is.
Oh, yeah. All of the trophies in comparison to, like, the, I think
I
probably,
like the World Series.
No, that one's
you can't drink,
I can't
drink out of it.
Look at that World Series trophy without thinking of George Costanza dragging it around the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I think it's good for.
I like calling it the Larry O'B in the NBA, but that's about it.
It's a nice looking trophy, too, but there's just no trophy in all of sports that brings out that star factor. Like, it is the star. You're right. It's a great way to put it.
Like, and takes your breath away.
You changed my mind because, like you, my sensibilities were like, whoa,
this
why are we
is not
seeing
when this happens.
Yeah. Why are we seeing, like, it was like watching a certain video from Edmonton. I was like, whoa, what are we watching here? Seeing it too early.
So earlier I said, people want to praise Connor McDavid. Praise him all you want. He got outplayed by Barkov.
He did.
In Saturday night. That can't happen tonight. Okay. Mm-hmm. Under no circumstance can that guy be +2 and you -2, Connor. In no world.
Here's the thing, though. Barkov's really good. And it is an uphill battle. And I love what Simmer said about Gretz talking about Krejci. It's like, oh, yeah, crap.
Yeah.
That guy's really good.
Yeah.
And he is really good. And this is his role. This is one of the reasons I kind of thought that the Cats, it didn't play out like I thought it was going to watching the game, mm-hmm. right? Like, it looked different than I expected it, but the Barkov versus McDavid thing, if they win the Barkov minutes, the Panthers, mm-hmm. then Oilers in massive trouble here. Yeah. And that's why they win the game one.
That's why I asked Zimmer about making adjustments, because it's not beyond McDavid to roll out the same two groups and he just owns it the next night.
He made an excellent point, Zimmer, in terms of just sometimes, you know, especially when you talk about two different conferences, that you just need a look.
Mm-hmm.
You need a look out of a guy. Yeah. And I think Connor got his out of Barkov.
Barkov just makes you take different routes, right?
In another world,
he kind of angles you.
Tonight, there's just not a chance that Connor could take a chance on jumping in on an offensive play and then leaving 160-foot mm-hmm. 3-on-2 with Barkov leading the way.
But, like, once you're having this conversation, I don't know if I love it. I don't know if I love that we're like, hey, McDavid now needs to think more about...
Yeah, defense.
You know?
Defense. Yeah. Say it.
No, I will never... No, dare you suggest that?
No, I don't know. He does.
We got quotes.
Oh yeah, we have a few clips.
Great producing here. We got lots. What do we got here? Stuff. We got Connor McDavid on the Hockey Gods. We got Paul Maurice on Play and Dry and McDavid, and we got Knobloch on CC coming out tonight. Where do you want to go?
I want to play the first clip from Connor McDavid. So clip one, please, Andrew.
The scoring that this team has, the power play that this team has, that getting goalied one game doesn't have to lead to more. This team has enough. That just can't last.
You know, maybe it was the hockey gods getting us back for that game six, you know, where we probably didn't deserve to win. You know, tonight maybe we deserved, you know, at least one goal or maybe two goals, and we don't find a way to get them. You know, I know this group will stick with it, bounce back. That's what we take a lot of pride in doing, and we'll gear up for a big one on Monday.
As a strict believer in the hockey gods, I know you're not the biggest believer in the hockey gods.
No.
But I pray at the church of the hockey gods. There's not many things I'm more fearful of. Oh, yeah. The hockey gods hate Toronto. It's clear. But the fact that the best player in the league is talking with the hockey gods means they exist. So, sorry, Vorney.
No, what it means is this sport has randomness. I mean, it really does. And sometimes you win when you should lose and lose when you should win. But the suggestion of that is one that now rubs me the wrong way, covering the Leafs the way we have for so many years here, where the process is good and we didn't get the result we wanted. It's all about the process. Stick to it. We didn't get the result. Yeah. It's result time, baby. You know? And it's like, you don't want to hear much about process, but and just...
Edmonton had the glaring mistakes that bit them, mm-hmm. and Florida did not.
Yeah.
And that one leads us to Knobloch's clip on CC coming out.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not... random. That's been an ongoing issue.
Well, and paired with Nurse in particular, they don't work.
So let's have a listen. Knobloch.
It's not easy. You've got a player that's been a big part of our team and has played very well, and we've had those difficult decisions with other players throughout the playoffs. And it's not easy for me. You know, we're in it for the best for our team, and we feel that this is something that's going to help our team. And maybe it's not fair for Cody be coming out of the lineup or whoever it was in the past, but we feel that the lineup changes that we are making, either we're adding more speed, more size, more scoring, a penalty killer, whatever it is, we feel that that slight advantage or that change is going to help us move forward. And there's going to be a time where Cody's back in the lineup because we need what he brings.
You just cannot get beat by Bennett on the second goal.
He self-chips to himself and beats everyone to it, yeah.
You cannot let Bennett get his stick.
Or the Nurse puck watching.
You've got body position, but you cannot let Bennett's stick beat yours to the puck.
First touch. So important. You know, they're willing to take the hit, but to be the first touch, that's huge.
And on top of that, Nurse is completely caught flat-footed with his back towards the slot.
Yeah, he owned it to CC. He was like,
That is a mistake that you cannot overcome in the Stanley Cup Final.
Did you see the stat I put in there about the 50 goals against the playoff? The Oilers have had 50 goals against the playoff
this playoff run, sorry, and Nurse has been on the ice for 26 of them.
It's a high number. I mean, he plays a lot and plays good lines, but that's too many.
It's too many.
And so right now they're going to pair Desharnais with them. Interesting leaving Kulak and Broberg. Broberg played 12 regular season games for them. This will be his fifth playoff game now. They're obviously very happy with what he's brought. Does make me a little uneasy having a guy so inexperienced in this series. Like, I know CeCe made some mistakes and it's probably the right call, but, you know, just, I know Oilers fans know there's a lot coming from this Broberg, but it just feels a little early and you worry about those sort of moments where you're like one-off moments where you can get burnt.
So I have two separate scenarios that I want to bring up with you heading into game two tonight, because this is what I thought about coming into that game, that the Oilers played really well. Like you said, they have a few breakdowns, but they played really well. And I thought for the most part, the Panthers didn't look great. So if you're in that Oilers room, in your mind, you're like, well, we did as well as we could. We played great. And then if you're in that Panthers room, you're thinking, oh my God, we played great. We didn't play great at all. We got stolen one from our goalie and away we go here. Like, which side of it do you think is a more correct feeling? Like, the Panthers,
I don't think Bob is
going to
be that good. Bob was unbelievable. I don't think he could be that good.
I don't see a big drop off.
That was J.S.
Shiger. I think he's moving and tracking as well as we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like,
he is tracking
the zone right now.
The Henrik and the Nugent Hopkins breakaways were never close to going in. Mm-hmm. Stuffed.
It's been that way for a little while now, too. Like, there's no cold
couple
spell
hiccups over the,
coming.
Like, a couple hiccups against the Bruins where you're like, oh, maybe, and they just locked it right back in against the Rangers. One five-goal game against the Rangers, that OT game, but outside, there have been few and far between.
Yeah.
It's a daunting task.
So maybe he'll be good. I don't know if he'll be as good as he was in game one, but I also don't think Florida is a team that typically gets the play taken to them game after game.
Hey, where was Matthew Tkachuk Saturday night?
Nowhere.
Very quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't even think he played 15 minutes.
Really? Wow, really? Yeah, I didn't look into that.
I'll look it up right now.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that means his coach didn't like how
he was playing. A non-factor.
Yeah. Which is someone who can be a real factor.
Look, where is he tonight? 100-plus-point
player who can,
Where is he tonight?
He needs to be better. Wonder if he's got something going on, too, the way, like, Evander Kane is a non-factor as a guy who needs
to be a
factor.
How many minutes for Evander Kane?
We had Tkachuk played 13:57 in that game.
Wow.
There you go.
And you wanted Kane played 15:22.
Yeah.
Jeez, guys.
Yeah.
Those are two.
So there's a lot for a few guys to step up here.
So funny looking at the playoff ice times. And just like, you know, you get used to looking at regular season ice times where it's just a lot of Draisaitl, McDavid, and Hyman.
How much are they? What are they, 24
or something? McDavid played 25-19.
That was chasing, though. Draisaitl, and then you put them together.
23-14, and Hyman played 23-39.
When you're chasing, a lot of shifts together, too, late, trying to get something going.
That adds to it a bit. Hyman also, like, in terms of chances, he has the great chance 30 seconds into the game. He had the one in front of the net on the power play. Like, you know, he got the same looks he typically does.
How, you know, everyone talks about Carolina as being the smartest organization and all the advanced stat stuff. What the hell happened with Forsling? How good is he?
Well, I guess Carolina's D has been very good.
That's such a crazy miss
to me. Did he have a Chicago stopover?
Yeah, he came from Chicago.
Yeah.
No, I thought he came from Carolina. Wasn't he claimed off Carolina?
I think he went Carolina, Chicago, or is it Chicago, Carolina?
Anyways.
Yeah.
Whoever made the mistake.
I think Chicago was the last stop.
To me, it makes you feel better either way when someone else missed too.
Yeah, that's how I sleep at night with Verhaeghe.
I'm now curious. Did he come from Chicago or Carolina?
I failed in my immediate search, but I'll tell you, he was in Chicago first and then Charlotte in the American League. Never actually played games for Carolina, but was at their American League team for 57 games.
But he was claimed off of Chicago.
Yes. Carolina claimed him from Chicago. Yeah.
And then how did he get
He's, I mean, a Norris Votes guy.
Like, he is awesome. Shutdown guy.
Yeah.
Anyways, game time?
All right, let's do it.
We're running long. Do you want to do?
Oh yeah, crap.
You want to do?
Yeah, we'll do game time after the break.
Okay.
Break. All right, and plus a few news and notes, including you're gonna have to explain this to me because I'm the dinosaur here on Cap Friendly.
Yeah.
And what does this mean for Sammy when I go, Sammy? What's left on his deal?
Sad things for all of us.
All right, we'll get into that and more still. Plenty to go on Real Kipper and Bourne. Don't go away.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Okay, listen very carefully here before we get to game time. Our Sammy McKee is going to give you a chance to go to Edmonton, all expense paid.
By Sammy.
By Sammy. And, courtesy of me.
Yeah, us.
Just the three of us.
Yeah.
And
that's
Rogers.
Actually more Kipper. But anyways, Rogers has announced an exciting new national contest called Bring Stanley Home, to send Rogers customers and hockey fans from across Canada to the Stanley Cup Final in Edmonton. Rogers customers have the chance to win 10 VIP trips for two to attend Game 4 in Edmonton on Saturday, June 15th. This prize also includes travel and accommodation plus premium viewing at a game day concert outside Rogers Place. Hey, now, visit rogers.com/Stanley Cup to enter for your chance to win and for more details. So,
That's a good prize.
Decent little prize there, courtesy of our great friends at Rogers.
Thank you, Ned Rogers.
And now it's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So, couple things for tonight. First of all, the Oilers are underdogs again, plus 110 in the game tonight, minus 130 for the Panthers on the money line. If you think the Oilers are going to win this series, tonight for me is pretty crucial.
Yeah.
Tonight for me is, like, I don't know what the numbers are when you go down 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Finals, but it can't be great.
I'll tell you.
Not great.
9%.
9%. You just get that one figured out in that old cranium up there?
You just ran the numbers?
I ran the numbers. If the Edmonton Oilers lose tonight, they have a 9% chance of coming back and winning the Stanley Cup Final.
We superimpose the Zach Galifianakis questions and everything around him.
91% are Stanley Cup champions who go up 2-0 in a final.
Yeah. So what I'm telling you.
How do you know that?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you what I had for breakfast today.
So first in this year, you've had a stat that I've been like, wow, that's really useful.
A great stat, Kippy.
All right.
Anyways, if they're going to do that, Connor McDavid's going to have to severely outplay Barkov like he didn't do in game one, like we've been talking about. To me, the Connor McDavid 3 points is plus 280. Obviously not a great number, Connor McDavid, but I feel like if they're going to win this game, you believe they're going to win this game, they're going to need him to play great. So give me Connor McDavid 3 points at plus 280.
Wow.
So he is also, like, he's got... coming off losses in the playoffs, too, his numbers are off the charts, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you what that stat is.
Do you have that?
It is funny. I shouldn't say it's funny, but, like, you hope the Oilers don't look at 97 and go fix it. You know, he alone is not going to be enough to beat the Florida Panthers 4 times here. So he needs a big night, but it'll start with him.
Okay. And that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
All righty.
Okay. Before the break, I mentioned to you that there seems to be a pretty big story out there involving the NHL, the Washington Capitals, and people in the media.
Yeah.
Because we included have been always, hey, how much does he make? And let's go to Cap Friendly.
Yeah.
But Cap Friendly now has been sold to the Washington Capitals. So you tell me what this kind of means.
So first off, shout out to its predecessor, Cap Geek.
Remember Cap Geek? I do remember Cap Geek.
Somebody got sick and died.
Yeah. It was a tragic story. This one, Dominic Zrim is the co-owner and director, and he's worked for Chicago and San Jose in the past. When you're an NHL team, you need a database like this internally. You know, and so the Toronto Maple Leafs hired a bunch of people that they have their own internal system that is not cap gear or cap friendly that you can go on and use. And if you don't have one, you got to pay to build one. Or you can just hire the people who do it very well, better than anyone, very professional. They've already worked in the NHL. You buy the people, you buy the tools. Tough beans for the rest of us.
How much do you think? Did they say how much it was? How much they would have paid for that?
Any idea?
But like,
okay, this is the part that kind of gets me, okay?
Yeah.
Is like, you are a multi-billion dollar organization.
Mm-hmm.
You spend millions, tens of millions. You do sports science departements. You have sleep doctors.
You pay Rasmus Sandin.
You go and blow bad signings all day long.
Yeah.
Poor Rasmus.
I know, he's a great kid.
But to take your multi-billion dollar industry, you're gonna base this on a free public website called Cap Friendly. And when it disappears, you're kind of screwed.
You're talking about the public, the NHL.
I'm talking about NHL clubs that have relied on this.
Yeah, I know. It's
like, what are you, idiots? What are you, stupid? You've been in the dark ages.
Amen.
Why would you leave your organization in the hands of a public website that every Tom, Dick, and Harry uses when you've spent millions and wasted millions?
Yeah.
But you won't go and start your own Cap Friendly?
I don't know who the organization is, but there are some who don't have one, I'm sure, who are relying on this, who right now are going, oh.
You think?
I do think that there's teams that rely exclusively on it.
There were teams, like Cap Friendly, I think they made it public that teams have hired them for their data.
Yeah.
So and they had to go back. Cap Friendly had to go back to like two or three teams, I don't know how many, and say, hey, we've been sold, so...
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. Well, so the Washington Capitals had to buy out other teams.
That might be their greatest gain is the Caps, is just making life harder on other people.
Huh.
One of the things that always killed me, so when I was with the Marlies and we would do
I use Cap Friendly literally three times the way. So
the player development program would have Barb Underhill as a skating coach and Daryl Belfry as a skills coach. This is when I was there. And Barb worked for Toronto and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Daryl worked for Austin and Patrick Kane or whatever the names were. And so Underhill would leave the Leafs skate, and then she'd go, like when Tampa was in town, she'd go work with the other team. It's like, if her services are that valuable, can you not pay her so the other team cannot have her? Can you not buy the thing? This is what buying Cap Friendly is to me. Buy the asset so other teams can't have the asset.
Really dumb, cheap teams out
there. The way
that
you spend money. Yeah, this is one of the places you could spend it and have an advantage and take it away from your opponents.
But there's got to be enough, for lack of a better term, dorks out there
that
you could pay lots of money to build you Cap Friendly.
When teams started taking up...
But to be honest, sorry to cut you off. But it... You got to understand too, like, and I'm not a tech guy, but you know, when Google goes and buys WhatsApp, they're liking this a sophisticated software. They like what you've built. They just buy it, right? So maybe you hire three nerds, but they don't build you something.
What's crap? They build a knockoff that's not as good, right?
They just don't build you. So just stroke the check and buy it.
But also like
Cap unfriendly.
But you can't leave yourself vulnerable if you're relying on it, if you're another hockey club.
For sure you can.
That's just stupid dinosaurs.
So when analytics became popular in the NHL and teams knew that they had to have it, teams started buying up the best public people. You know, Tyler Della with New Jersey now was one of the early people to go. So every team goes, we need someone, and they buy up these public people. There's not 32 good public people. There's like eight, and then everyone after that.
The quarterbacks.
Exactly. Yeah. Then everyone else is buying up who's the next. So you're talking about, you know, can't they just hire some other nerds? They can.
But they're not as good as the other nerds.
Yeah, you may be missing the good nerds.
Yeah, the good nerds are gone. God. Should have been a nerd, boys.
Really should have been a nerd.
Should have paid attention
way more
in
money
school.
In nerding.
But, like, again, just where are you putting your money? And... How do you leave yourself vulnerable?
Yeah. Nope. Silly.
So, like,
shout out to Cap Friendly. So, I think Puckpedia is very good.
Puckpedia?
Yeah.
Is
that the new one? Then they'll get bought. Somebody else will buy them.
Well, that's it.
Because you're going to be lazy.
Whoever
and you're
right
gonna...
now no longer has access to Cap Friendly is like, what do they cost?
So, I mean, why, if you're in the NHL, if you're like the NHL people, why don't they just have a site? Shouldn't the NHL have a public site where they like put it out there for people?
They must have some internal thing.
But, like, make it external. Shouldn't, if you're the league...
Well, they didn't want... Like, public salaries weren't always this open.
Yeah, I know.
Like we all knew, you know?
Yeah,
so
well,
you're
there's
right
a cap,
though.
So you have to know.
So,
I think the league talked about buying Cap Friendly once upon a time,
that
if I
great.
Recall.
JB, so if you're Cap Friendly all these years and you have no affiliation with the NHL, You have no affiliation with the NHLPA. Where do they get their data? Are teams feeding them? Like, are they volunteering the information?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, it tends to come from insiders. Like, I think their initial reports where they get the information from.
So they
from.
Call the clubs up and they say, hey, listen, we want your information, and you readily give it to them?
I don't know. I don't know how they get the official data. Because
they will put, for Cap Friendly, they'll put, like, if someone is reportedly, Friege puts out that Max Domi signs at the Leafs, they'll put, like, according to this person.
Attributed to whoever the source is.
And then once it's once the official...
But not for very long. They get it quick, and then they have the...
I think it's usually
they have
the
a list of the no moves. They have the list of the no trades.
Yeah, they get everything quick.
They get everything quick.
Yeah.
So somebody's... Is it an agent? Is it someone in central registry?
Probably.
Because
that's probably it.
That's...
But you're right. Why would they give them that information?
Right?
Unless the league appreciates having a public site like that out there. I paid them to have an ad-free experience because on this show, I'm quickly pulling stuff up. I don't need
like
sort of pop-ups.
If you're getting your money back now?
So
I probably will cancel my subscription, I would imagine.
So it's kind of, I don't know if this is factual or not, but I'll tell you that there's some people that think that a guy like Lou Lamoriello will purposely hold salaries back, either from announcing it or maybe even central registry. So the information on the cap doesn't get public.
Mm-hmm.
You think that might happen more?
Maybe a little more situations like Ottawa where they won't tell people there's a no trade clause and they'll trade them anyway and then they'll lose picks. Who knows? It'd be fun.
I mean, like, what? I mean, way to go, Lou. Like, what's that going to do?
Ah.
Yeah, maybe you'll get you.
That's one of those Louisms.
A second win in the first round next year.
Why didn't
maybe?
I pay more attention to, like, my computer classes?
I know.
You didn't go. Don't act like you were there.
That's a great point.
All right, what else is making news out there?
Well, they announced the Four Nations face-off.
Live on Sportsnet, baby.
Sportsnet in Boston and Montreal.
Can we get Chechia in?
Huh?
Yeah, Chechia?
Chechia in?
No.
It's too late.
You just get
Five
the four
Nations
you get
face-off.
Now.
But no so Toronto?
Huh?
No Toronto? You're not going to have games in Toronto?
Are the games not in Toronto?
No, Montreal and Boston.
What I had heard between, like, even the delay, somebody mentioned to me that... either the league or the PA, or maybe both, because they're both in it together, were like trying to get tourism money.
What do you mean?
To the cities.
Oh, they want the cities to pay them to come there?
Yes. Yeah.
Man, the league.
And Boston, I think, stroked a check.
They did.
Really?
I heard that.
Interesting.
I don't think
rumor
that's a
has
bad,
it.
I don't
maybe,
think that's a bad use of tourism
money. I don't
money.
Know, a million.
That brings people.
I don't know what the number would be. I'm guessing, but some suggested maybe $1 million out of Boston, and Montreal didn't want to pay.
I can't really. I can't help but notice.
I wonder
that
if they got money out of Montreal.
Be interesting to know. Yeah, Toronto has no money as a city, so.
Yeah, we can't have people here. The Gardener, we can't get anybody on the Gardener.
We can't get anyone around.
Fill a pothole, please.
Taking hot air balloons around the city.
There is nothing more daunting to me right now than getting in a car in Toronto.
I know.
It takes.
It's national. No one cares.
Okay, it does. It matters. You're about to hear it. Hour and a half to get anywhere. Anyways.
It's true. Canada, USA will be on a Saturday night this upcoming February.
Great. Can't
Live
wait to watch
Sportsnet.
It from vacation in Florida.
Pardon? You're going to be working it, pal.
No. It's on in Toronto. We don't have to work.
Fair enough.
Six players. They're naming six players for at the end of the month. So Canada will announce six players. I don't think any of them will be a goalie, probably.
I'm going to guess.
It'll be
no
like
goalie.
The All-Star where they'll like, not want to go?
No. People want to be at this. It's too long since
All right.
best on best.
Good.
Yeah.
We got Markstrom, a potential target for the Leafs and maybe Sens. GMs express a desire to tweak the LTIR salary cap rules for playoffs.
That's out of that.
Any of those?
I don't know.
Pique your interest?
I don't have a good feeling about Markstrom going to the Sens or the Leafs.
No?
No.
Well, the Sens just did their thing, didn't they?
Well, they can't pay. What are they paying Corpusello?
15 more
million
years,
a year,
isn't it?
Yeah. Like he's paying a lot of money, so I don't know. That one doesn't make any sense to me. But
the
Leafs
in New Jersey,
the Leafs makes a lot of sense.
Does it?
Yes. Older guy, couple years. You can pair him with Wall.
Can you get in 6.5?
Yep. You can find a way. Well, they got all this cap space, right? So, anyways.
Yeah. Until you sign two defensemen, too.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Which they need.
So the salary cap went up.
Oh yeah.
To a nice number, right? 88 or something.
88?
Yeah, great.
What do you think about tweaking the LTIR?
I think
in the playoffs?
You should have to dress. Your skaters should have to fit under.
Not a chance the PA touches that.
No,
this serves them no purpose to do it.
Why not just have a cap compliant lineup? It's easy. Done.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. But to Kip's point, they player, won't. Yeah.
Anyways, that's it.
Our thanks to Craig Simpson, who's getting ready for Game 2 puck drop. You know where to find it, right on all your Sportsnet platforms. Enjoy it. We're back tomorrow. Give us a rating and review if you get a chance. We'd love to hear from you.